Admiral, just the chief of staff. I heard talk about this guy somewhere around the staff. I found out that the chief of staff was taking a group of senior officers over to some old ship. Isabel.
Yeah.
Isabel, yeah. And so I got my name on the list to go over there. I was a lieutenant. Most of them were captains and commanders. They just wanted to go over and see what this guy looked like. And we got all crowded into the wardroom, and a few things said in the conversation, but I couldn't hardly hear what it was because I was so far in the background. So I came away, I think I shook hands with him, but I came away that this guy had a lot of poise. There were a lot of nice things said about him and what he accomplished. But he handled it very well. Didn't get thrown off course at all. But looking back, I thought I'd probably never see him again. A lot of people in the Navy. But from there, I went up to line school, and I came back down to Coronado to be the first public information officer on the first fleet staff. Again, it was the admiral who was a concrete S-back and had jerked me off of the Craig. He now became commander first fleet, and he found out where I was. Fortunately, I was up at Monterey going to this line school. So I had 3.5 great years as public affairs officer for a fleet staff. And from then I went to Omaha, Nebraska, which is the headquarters for the Naval Reserve, Surface Naval Reserve. And I got out of there as soon as I could. The way it worked, my mother, they found out she had cancer. She's living in Green Bay. And I just called the 9th Naval District, which is at Great Lakes. I said, hey, what's going on? I talked to the PAO. He said, well, we're looking for somebody to take my place because I got orders. I'm leaving. So I called Washington Public Affairs. They said, well, he can get sprung. If your admiral says he can leave there early, would have made about 18 months tour of duty at Omaha. But so right away I walked in to see the admiral. A good golfing buddy. And he says, well, you know what? I think you're just spinning your wheels here anyway. So if you can get it set up, you can go up to Great Lakes and you can go see your mother. It's only 200 miles away. I think that would be a great thing to happen. So I had another 2-year tour of duty. The Great Lakes, and it's fantastic. Just set the thing upside down. And a great boss. You know, So I got word from Washington. I wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but they're... Oh, they wanted me to come to Washington to be the Secretary of the Navy's Public Affairs Office. Oh, Christ, that's way over my head. We want this to happen. That's where Bud was. Yeah. So I went into Washington and was interviewed by Secretary of Course. And came out fine. I scheduled to relieve Jim Jenkins. Then a couple of months later, I got a call from Jenkins and a letter saying that things all off, that he's being retained for another year because of some projects they were working on. The secretary thought that Jenkins just had to stay there. However, we're going to stash you. We're going to send you to the War College for a year. And by that time, I could go to the secretary's office. And, okay, I wasn't supposed to tell anybody that. I'd be stashed and so forth. But that's the way it worked out. But in the meantime, Course got fired. And Paul Nitza came in to relieve him in, I guess it was November, something like that. And I got a phone call from Jim Jenkins, said, well, if you're still interested in this job, it's available, but you'll have to go through the pro forma of coming in to see the secretary. I said, well, yeah, give me orders to come down there, so I'll do that. So I went down, and that's when I really met Bud Zumwalt. And I think the only thing that he knew, well, I guess he got my record on a few prayers. That would stand up for itself. But, I went in to see Nitza, and he wasn't impressed with me, and I wasn't really impressed with him. Because he didn't think the public affairs officer was necessary. But fortunately, Bud talked to me before I went in. Was it in that chapter that you had 18?
Yeah. The chapter I had describes what happened when you went in.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay.
But I'm sorry, I know. This might be a good place for me to ask you about, I focus a lot on the relationship between Zumwalt and Nitza.
Yeah.
Which, in many ways, it became his mentor, facilitated his career. Went to extraordinary lengths to advance him and the like, all of which, and then later they would, and spent all that time with it at his farm in Virginia,
Maryland.
In Maryland, yeah. Which also got Admiral Moore a little annoyed, so there's a couple of things within that I'm pretty interested in. One is, was it obvious to you that Zumwalt and Nitza had this sort of extraordinary relationship?
Yes, definitely. He was a protege, but he treated him more like a son. And that wasn't too obvious to too many people, but they just thought that they were close, and Bud was a real assistance to Nitza. Nitza never had any Navy background. But he got in and got into the job, and I thought he was the most productive secretary of the Navy we've ever had. And Bud was in there. He was steering him which way to go. And one thing that's pertinent here is that, you know, Bud got selected 3 years ahead of in his class. Well, I guess that may have happened one other time, but or Bud may have been the first. He'd have for 3 years early, but that's because of the fitness reports. Nitzel was signing for, in the Secretary of Defense situation, and also in SECNAV. One of the things that NHTSA got onto, and probably with Bud's instigation, was that we have a stodgy old Navy in the flag community. And the reason was because if you made 2 stars, you could rely on the on a nice life for 10 years anyway, because I guess the average age was, well, maybe a little, it was about 53, 54 when you made flag rank. And that became a cudgel for NHTSA. He was going to reduce that. The admirals could stay until they were age 62, and most of them were district commandants and just sat on their ass and counted how many stewards they had. What are you going to do with that tape?
No. This is light stuff compared to what some old said.
Okay. Yeah, good.
I won't quote you without asking permission.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, well, it's true. And Bud being selected was that early. It was the start of the program.
Now, did you ever accompany them to the farm on his weekend?
Not on the weekend, but I was out there several times.
Yeah. Because one of the things I've encountered, especially the correspondence on it, looked like someone would leave here on a Friday or Saturday, and he'd spend the weekend there almost all the time with his family as well. Yeah. And did you ever hear these rumors that were going on that Admiral Moore was always wondering what's Buds and Walt doing out there with became quite upset at it.
He was that kind of guy. I knew Tom Moore when he was a commander. He was my boss in the Midway.
Okay.
And got along real well. I always thought he was a leader in the fact that he would call people by their first names. Or he had a name for you anyway. And, I was in the communications department. He was the ops officer. But, he used to call me Tommy, so I thought he was great.
I think there's something else I want to talk about. I want more later, but it's my understanding that from everything Zumwalt has written about this, that would you concur that one of the reasons Zumwalt was sent to Vietnam and more liked that idea was because it got him off the farm, it broke up the relationship with Nitzy, and sent him to a place where no one would ever hear from him again, because Vietnam was considered at that time sort of the death of a career, and he was going to be his Admiral Beth, who of course basically it was going to be the end of his career, and Moore was quite pleased with how he had arranged how this all worked out. Would you concur with that?
Yeah, yes. generally. Well, he didn't like surface people. Anyway, surface warfare people, aviator. But he didn't have much of a career. He's an aviator. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to come back to more later when it's time, when someone gets appointed CNO, but because there are several things that are very interesting to me right there I'd like your take on, but we're still a little early in that period. So during this period of Nitzsche and Zumwalt, I know you've come in the office now. I've read your account of working with Zumwalt and how bright you thought he was and how you could just juggle more balls in the air than most people could. You seem to have a good way of working with people. I mean, clearly, he established very early a good working relation. Once he determined that someone could handle the work, I think that was the key with Zumwalt. Once he determined that someone could bounce balls and deal with that, then he really brought them in a way that became a distinct managerial style of his. Did you ever observe him with Rick Over this period?
No, I never did. I will say that practically every CNO or every secretary that came in during the Rick Over period vowed that they're going to get that son of a bitch. And nobody did. He is a survivor.
The Zumwalt material on Rick Over is just fascinating. He kept a book on Rick Over. He thought that he had done some good things, but he was the greatest thorn in the side of the Navy and his goals that what he wanted to accomplish then in Washington. And he also has this wonderful description you've probably read in this book about the Rick Over interview, which was a very famous, notorious sort of procedure, but nothing like your interview with Nitzsche. This going for an interview with Rick Over was one of these classic things that happened. Rick Over would leave him waiting for an hour or two, come back, challenge him on everything, leave the room again, tell him you can never work for me. And, this one thing after
yeah, room. That's right. This is
But now, okay, so now you're, in terms of your own career, you've met, you're in Nitzsche's office, but you end up going, to Vietnam with someone.
No, I didn't.
Not at all.
No, he wanted me to go. At that time, there were no possibilities for public information people, public affairs people at that time, to become a flag officer. Bud's the one that turned that around. And so I was reaching the stage that I had to look. I still had kids going to school and so forth. So I had to look for something. What the hell am I going to do after I leave here? Because there's no better job than the Secretary of the Navy's Public Affairs Office. So, and I talked about that to Bud a couple of times. And for that argument, I just said, I don't want to go out there and spend a year with you or whatever it takes, and then retire from Vietnam and come back and try to establish all my contacts and so forth. But he just left it. Don't you ever retire until you talk to me, finally. Because he else, I think he thought I was bullshitting. And I thought it would have been great to work with him. But, the guy was fearless. He was going out there in the field.
Now, were you So I know I read somewhere, did you fly out and accompany him back, though, when he was appointed CNO? Did I read that, or did I...
Well, that's a nice little story. I was considering going, retiring. And Stan Turner became the executive assistant. He says, you're too young to go home. We need you and so forth. And he talked to secretary.
Chafee?
Chafee, yeah, from Rhode Island. Very nice guy.
Yep.
Fantastic, in a lot of respects. And they decided that they would send me to Harvard for the advanced management program if I come back and be the deputy chief of information for 2 years. And I said, you're going to send me to school for 14 weeks, and I'm supposed to spend 2 more years in the Navy as repayment for that. So usually it's just an equal to time ratio there, but we finally agreed that I'd love to get that in my resume that I had gone to the Harvard Business School. But I, one year as a deputy. Of course, in the meantime, I was at Harvard when Bud called. I don't know, is that in the chapter you had?
Not very much detail. It said you were at Harvard, and that was where I got the impression, I think, that you went. You left Harvard to fly somewhere, to fly back with him. I'm not sure I got that right, though.
Yeah, well, he called and said, ability to get the, it's always very brief telephone conversation. Hi, Bill, it's Bud. Did you get the good news? I said, what news? He says, I've been nominated to be a CNO. I said, oh yeah, I knew that. That's right. Well, he said, well, how the hell do you know it? He said, I didn't know that until this morning. They just told me. And you're one of the first guys I called. And I said, well, I've always told you, but I'll never reveal my sources. And he said, well, okay. But the reason I called is I want you to come down here, back to Washington, fly back to Saigon with me and spend the rest of the time until I come back to Washington. Because I want to work on this paper that you're developing, what I'm going to do in the next 4 years. Going to get Bagley, Worth Bagley, he was on a cruiser. Robbie Robertson, who was the legal officer when he was there, in the secretary's office together, and we're going to go make the plan for 4 years. I said, well, gee, Bud, you know, the Navy spent $5,000 to send me to this school. And I'm learning a hell of a lot. And I knew as soon as I said that, I was going down the drain. He said, I don't think you understood what I said, Bill. He said, I want you to come back to Saigon with me. And yak, yak, yak. He said, do you understand? I said, yeah, I understand. But he clicked. And he hung up. So I sat there for about a minute. And I said, Jesus Christ, this guy's going to be the CNO. I don't want to go into Chinfo and be the deputy and have the big boss of me being very high in the big boss's shit list. And anyway, so I called back. I got the visitors. I had the visitors, flag officers, telephone. He was still there. I said, okay, bud, I thought about it. When's that plane leaving? Day after tomorrow. See you, thanks. He hung up. That was it. So I did go back to Saigon, but he did let me come back to graduate. I spent about 3 weeks out there. I came back, graduated, up at Harvard, and flew back to Saigon for his last week there, which was impressive.
So
Admiral Chong.
I just interviewed him in California. He's still,
yeah, he said that.
He's still doing well.
He is. Good.
He looks great. And he still has great recall of things I needed to speak to him about. And it's good to see him. And I've brought a lot of things to refresh some of his memory on certain things. But he loved it. He loved his brother.
I should have.
So now, when you were in Vietnam for those 3 weeks, was Elmo there when you were there at that time?
Yeah.
So he was there. Yeah. So you were there for the change of command as well.
Yeah.
And then you flew back to Vietnam.
Jerry King, I knew very well. Really, but.
And then you flew back together, and then.
No, we went around the world.
And then this amazing 4-year term is about begins. His CNO. And so you had a vantage point during this period onto a lot of things. I mean, my book. I spent a lot of time looking and reading files on, for example. There's so many aspects of it. There's the Z-grams, obviously. There's the beards, the booze, and the broads, and all that stuff. But then there's also the race riots on the race relations, what happened on the Constellation and other ships, and the Hicks Committee, dealing with all that. And you're the public affairs officer during this whole thing as well. You've got a bird's eye view into it. There's also the something that Admiral Zumwalt. I was going to ask you if you knew that he was doing this, which is that every day Zumwalt would, speak into a tape recorder, record all of his thoughts, and have that transcribed.
No, I didn't know that.
So I have all of those. We're talking about voluminous tapes that have all been transcribed. So he offers his own views on things like these Admiral spy ring, all these things that, that happened during that period. And then, of course, growing Soviet challenge, Project 60, all of that. So I wanted to, I thought maybe it would be good. And then he dealt with all these people that appear in the book, like John Chafee and John Warner, Melvin Laird, people who appear all the time, and, General Abrams and Schlesinger. And then, of course, throughout it all, I've got a lot of material on Musa, too, which is a very wonderful story in a lot of ways. Maybe I could just ask you first about Zumwalt as here he was as an agent of change. He's changing the way the Navy is for blacks, for Chicanos, for Mexicans, for Filipinos, for women. All these things are happening on his watch. And there's a growing resentment amongst the more traditional Navy brass, this admiral's group that felt that he was moving way too quickly and he was rocking the boat and this was going to have disastrous consequences. And of course, when these problems occurred on the Constellation and elsewhere, this gave them their chance to get him, to try to get him. What was your take on all?
Well, I was right in the middle of it.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking.
I don't know if it's system that he established.
It was nothing that I had on from your book was on that at all.
Was that right?
And I haven't read anything about that from your own views. No. Not in chapter 18 that I got on the puzzle. Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah. The version I have has nothing about this.
Well, I've got two more chapters, which I'll give to you on a disc.
Oh, thank you.
But the one thing he came up with this idea to have a minority affairs office. And normally,